Welcome. You found the Love Mentalism Podcast, a podcast hosted by author Michael DeCamp that focuses on exploring, discussing, and promoting the deep concepts and practical application of biblical love. We hope you enjoy this episode and are challenged to learn to love more deeply. Jesus taught us and showed us the way. It's up to us to learn how to follow it. If more and more of us can do that, we will change the world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Love Mentalism Podcast. This is episode 3, and I'm your host, Mike DeCamp. And today we're going to get into another passage of scripture that probably used to perplex me. And I recently came to a different understanding of it, and I wanted to share that with you. Hopefully we're going to have a couple of interviews coming up, but not in this particular episode. So this is another exposition, another discussion. But before I jump into that, I want to share with you about a book I've been reading. I recently finished it. It's called The Huguenot Connection Trilogy. The Huguenot Connection Trilogy by Paul C.R. Monk. It's actually a rather thick book. I got it in paper, so I'm sure if you wanted to get it on ebook, you probably could. But it's actually three books in one. The first one is Merchants of Virtue. The second is Voyage of Malice. And the third is Land of Hope. And I found it a rather intriguing book. And it it actually spurred a lot of thoughts and, some spiritual connections in my synapses, I guess. It's a historical fiction, but it's based in the reality of the Huguenot persecution by Louis XIV in France in the 1580s, I think 1580s, maybe maybe it was 1680s. I've lost track of the years. Probably should go back and look that up, but I'm not going to. So if you want to look it up and correct me, then feel free. But Louis XIV was a Catholic king in France, and this is not a reflection on the Catholic Church or on any other church. It's just a point in history, and it was a persecution between the Catholic Church against Protestants, and in particular, they were known as Huguenots in France. And actually, my wife gave this book to me because I can trace my lineage back to French Huguenots. At least that's what I've been told by my cousins and my aunts and uncles, that if we trace it back, we came over, a Huguenot came over fleeing persecution in France. And actually I traced my lineage not long ago. You can do that on the internet these days. And I managed to do it without spending any money. Probably if I wanted details, I could spend some money and get a little deeper, but I did not do that. But I traced it all the way back to France, the Picardy region of France. So, and it was about the right time period. So I think it's probably true. But the thing about this book that struck me is it's really all about a family, rather wealthy family, well off. They were merchants. They were well off in their lifestyle. They lived well. They lived in a nice home. They had a lot going for them. But they were Protestants. They were Huguenots. And Louis XIV was determined to unify France under one king, under one government, under one religion. And so he took it upon himself to wipe the Protestants, the Huguenots, off the map in France. And this one particular family suffered that persecution, and ultimately the husband went one way through imprisonment and being enslaved, and the wife went the other way, escaping. And it's all about their journeys, and eventually, if their attempts to reunite with one another in a new place. And I found it interesting because there's one passage the author writes it from the mind of the husband. He's asking himself, how could such an institution have been allowed to breed hatred in the name of Christ and get away with it for centuries? How could it preach humility when it was adorned with gold? How could it be allowed to give Christendom such an appalling reputation for so long? Jacob was confused. That one paragraph just kind of struck me, because I think there are a lot of people confused today. I think they're confused about Christianity. They don't understand how we can come across as Christians so hateful. And I think they have a point. And so it paralleled with me what I see in everyday life today. That's the Huguenot Connection trilogy. If you like historical fiction, I would recommend that you get that and give it a read. It'll take you a while unless you're a really fast reader, because it took me quite a while to get through it. But I did enjoy the story. It's quite a tale. So give it a check out. The personal moment I want to share with you this particular week is about my dad. I want to share with you my dad's church experience. My dad, as the whole time I knew him, he's been gone now for over 20 years, but the whole time I knew him, he would never visit church with me. He would never go to church with me. He would talk church. He would talk God. He would talk Bible. He was knowledgeable. He read his Bible almost every day, but he refused to go to church. When I got married, it was practically impossible to get him to come to the church building for the wedding. He just couldn't hardly bring himself to do that. Eventually, I think probably through the influence of my bride, he was finally convinced to go ahead and put that tux on and escort my mom into the church building and be there for the wedding. And I'm not sure, that might have been the first time he'd been in a church building in a very, very long time. Because you see, what happened to him when he was about 12 years old, he lived in northwestern Ohio near Van Wert. It was a rural area. He was in the, when he was 12 years old, that would have been about 1922 or so. And, you know, still very rural, very farm oriented. And, you know, he was one of, you know, probably at that time, probably one of nine kids, maybe 10 by then. And they didn't have much money, but he started going to church. And I think one of his brothers went to church on a regular basis. He was enjoying it. He was getting a lot out of it. And then he invited this neighbor kid who was a little bit younger than him to go to church with him. And the neighbor kid went, but the neighbor kid only had his farm clothes to wear to church. So he went into church with my dad wearing, he didn't have a Sunday best. His everyday clothes was the best he had. So he went to church wearing the best he had, which was his everyday farm clothes. Before they left that day, at least two people, well, I think the preacher and one of the elders of the church approached my dad and told my dad, "Don't bring that boy back until he's got proper clothes to wear." And my dad never went back. I think I listened to a sermon today about all the little checks and balances, the checks that we do to check, you know, to see if people are worthy of worshiping with us or worthy of Christ. And these are things that we make up. And that's one of the things that we've made up over the years is we have to dress a certain way and we have to act a certain way and walk a certain way. And in this case, it burned my dad in a way that I don't think that he ever overcame it. Further, when he got older, he did a lot of traveling in his 20s. This would have been in the 1930s. He traveled with his brother out west. And one of the trips, they took a car and they drove out west, and they were looking for work. And so they would work farms and ranches and did odd jobs and were ranch hands and various other things. And then another trip he went out, he actually rode the rails. So not in the passenger car either. He rode in the boxcars, and he went out west, and he did the same thing, traveling about, doing odd jobs, earning his keep. And he told me one time, he said, Mike, the only people to ever stiff me for my work were preachers. And those two experiences tainted him for the rest of his life. And I think it goes heavily to the subject of this particular, of this podcast, is how do we demonstrate our faith, demonstrate our connection to Christ to those who are looking at us. Okay, today's discussion starts in Matthew chapter 7, verses 21 to 23. This is a passage that always perplexed me, especially when I was younger and I was first learning about God, learning about Christ, reading the Bible, and I was being taught, you know, a certain way of looking at the Bible, a certain way of understanding the scriptures. I was being, you know, fed doctrines and teachings, and I'm not saying that they're all bad. I'm just saying this is what I was teaching and or what I was being fed. And this passage just perplexed me because it didn't seem to fit really well with what I was hearing. So let me read it to you. Matthew 7, verse 21. You'll recognize it, I think probably a lot of you will. It says, not everyone, this is Jesus speaking, it's part of the Sermon on the Mount, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons, and in your name perform many miracles? Then I'll tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evildoers. And I think the thing that used to perplex me is that they were doing religious things. They were calling him Lord. They were preaching, prophesying in his name. They were driving out demons. They were performing miracles. They seemed to be successfully pulling off some big miraculous things. And yet Jesus said, they won't enter the kingdom because he never knew them. How is this possible? How is it possible? Now, I had teachers try to explain it away to me. You know, obviously they had bad doctrine. You know, they had their doctrine messed up. They must not be baptizing the right way, or this or that or the other thing. They had bad doctrine. Or maybe it was because, well, you know, they're doing all these things, but they had false motives. They were doing it for themselves. Or, you know, they were just in the wrong church. They were with the wrong group of people. You know what the problem with those three things are? Jesus didn't say any of that. He just said they didn't do the will of the Father. And as a result, he didn't know them. In fact, he says, I never knew you. So what is this will that brings you into the view and relationship with Christ? What is the will of God that causes Jesus to be able to know you, to recognize you, to be some, so that you're someone that he says, hey, I know him. Come on in. You're in the kingdom. Obviously, it's not performing religious things. Obviously, it's not just calling him Lord. It's not even doing some miraculous things like driving out demons and other kinds of miracles. That doesn't do the trick. Apparently, people can do that and still not be in a relationship in a way that Jesus knows them. That I find intriguing. And maybe still a little perplexing, but that's, if I'm honest. But Jesus said, hey, I never knew you. So what is this will that brings you into the view and relationship with Christ? This is something that's been something that I've thought about for a very long time. And I think I've finally come across some things that clear this up for me. So I'm going to start in 1 John chapter 4. And I'm going to read a few passages that I think tie this together. We'll start in verse 4. Or chapter 4, verse 7 and 8 says, dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God, Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. And then you drop down to verse 12. It says, no one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is made complete in us. We'll drop another few verses down to verse 16. It says, and so we know and rely on the love God has for us. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God, and God in them. So I think, folks, that this passage back in Matthew 7 boils down to, are we loving? Are we loving people around us? Are we loving one another? I find that very, very intriguing. If you look over in John chapter 13, verses 34 and 35, and I'm probably going to talk about this passage again on another podcast, but this particular passage, this is where Jesus says, hey, I have a new command. I give you. Love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. It makes us recognizable as being Jesus's, as being God's. This is the mark of God's seal on our lives when we love one another. It says, everyone will know that you're my disciples if you love one another. Another question I have is, how is that demonstrated in our lives? You may recall, if you listened to the first podcast, I think I pointed out that love is not an emotion, biblical love. It's not how we feel. So when Jesus said, hey, as I have loved you, so you must love one another, everyone will know that you're my disciples if you love one another. It's not talking about how you emotionally feel about those around you. It's not how warm and fuzzy and how much the butterflies flow. This is about how you look out for what's best, how you take care of those around you, your intentional, tangible things. And I'm going to back that up with another passage in just a moment. So again, how is this love demonstrated in our lives? Is it by our religious deeds? I told you it wasn't emotion, but maybe it's our religious deeds. Well, apparently not. Prophesying in his name and doing miracles and driving out demons and other kinds of work apparently is not enough to demonstrate this love that we're supposed to have for one another. Apparently we can do all those things without that love. But I'm going to share with you, I think, a passage that does clear it up. It's Matthew chapter 25. Matthew 25, starting in verse 31. This is, I think, one of the classic passages of Scripture where Jesus actually sets a stage and clearly kind of, as an author, I know I write books, I write stories, and you know, I have to, as I write, I have to kind of set the stage. I have to show what things are looking like. You know, what's the background? What's going on? And this is a case, I think, where Jesus does that very well. It's the grand vision that Jesus shares with us of the end of all things, when all people are brought before his throne. And he says, when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne. So here he is, the Son of Man, Jesus. He's come in all his glory. So you think about whatever that brings to mind. It might be bright lights and colorful lights and maybe golden light and, you know, all of this glory that comes with it. And he's going to have all his angels with him, all of his angels there too. They're all around, they're arrayed around this glorious throne that he's sitting on. and all the nations will be gathered before him. So people from all parts of the world are gathered before his throne. And he said he'll separate the people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He'll put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. So he's talking about people here. So he sorts out people, and he says, okay, folks, so you folks are all over here on my right, and no, you folks, you're over here on my left. And he moves them apart from each other so that they're gathered together, but not intermingled. And it says, then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go visit you? When? I don't remember doing that. I don't remember you being around me and me doing that. It says, the king will reply, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it for me. Then he will say to those on his left, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. I needed clothes, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not look after me. They also will answer, Lord. Remember that whole Lord, Lord thing from the other passage? They will also answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty, or a stranger, or needing clothes, or sick, or in prison, and did not help you? I don't remember that. I don't remember seeing you on the side of the road, Lord. I don't remember hearing about you being, I don't remember that. And he says, truly, I tell you, whatever you did not do for one of the least of these, you did not do for me. Then they will go away. I never knew you. They will go away to eternal punishment, but the righteous to eternal life. Apparently, this love that brings us into Christ's realm of knowledge, the fact that he knows us, he sees us, he recognizes us, he embraces us. Apparently, that love is the tangible ways that we love people around us. Now, I want you to notice, nowhere in this passage is there anything about our method of worship. Nowhere in this passage is there anything about how we're structured as a church. Nowhere in this passage is there anything about women, what they can do and what they can't do. There's nothing in here about any of those doctrinal things that we fuss and we fight about and we hurl accusations at one another over. It's all about, how do we love our neighbor? How do we love that person next to us in a real tangible way? And by loving that person next to us in a real tangible way, we're loving Christ. So open your eyes. Open your eyes to the needs of the people around you. Frankly, I need to grow in this. Was pulling out of a Home Depot parking lot the other day, and there was a man standing there with a sign. You know who I'm talking about. You see them all over the place. And yes, sometimes I know this is kind of a scam thing, but sometimes it's not. And regardless, that person holding the sign, whether they're a scammer or really in need, they are still someone that Christ died for. And we still need to treat them with love and compassion in tangible ways. Sometimes I'm not very good about that. How about you? Open your eyes to the needs of the people around you. Hand out some cool drinks of water. Meet those needs and step into the view of Christ. Thank you very much again for being part of this episode, episode 3 of the Love Mentalism podcast. I want to thank Bill Whitehair. Thank you for the work you do. And folks, if this podcast has been an encouragement to you or moved you in some way, please share it with others. Share it on your social media. Let other people know. And I look forward to sharing with you again very soon when the Love Mentalism podcast is back again. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Love Mentalism podcast. You're welcome to send comments to the host at the following email address, michael@authormichaeldecamp.com. Michael is available for limited speaking engagements, both live and virtual. Reach out for details. The music for this podcast was written and performed by Xander Fadley. You can find his work at www.xanderfadley.com. The logo was created by Blue Sign Concepts, Indianapolis. Executive producer is Bill Whitehair. Please come back for the next episode of the Love Mentalism podcast.